This week on the Country Music Media Podcast, Loretta was playing the Richmond Coliseum, and a black man named Caesar Gators was patrolling the stage. He was part of the security team. He was a bouncer, and he was protecting her band and the whole stage, and he was described as having very, very dark skin. During the show, Loretta was singing Coal Miner's Daughter when she stopped, and she asked Caesar to stand and said, according to his lawyer, "If you people don't know what coal looks like, here is somebody who knows what coal is all about. Black is beautiful, ain't it, honey?" Welcome to the Country Music Media Podcast. My name is Billy Dukes, and I very much appreciate you joining the podcast for the very first time, or if you're finding a next episode, a new episode, that really means a lot to me as well. Had Big Rick Daniels on the show on Monday to talk about his phone call with Gary LaVox and conspiracy theories and the art of the good radio interview. Next Monday, great show lined up. Jonathan Bernstein from Rolling Stone is going to be my guest as we talk about his review of Morgan Wallen's new album. I don't want to say it was overly critical because it was a 3-star review out of 5, but he certainly pointed out some shortcomings in a pretty honest way. Rate and review the podcast at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform if it allows for it. And make sure you follow me at Billy Dukes on Twitter. You can always email me as well, billydukes@gmail.com, if you want to join the conversation or if you have a couple of comments you kind of want to send to me on the down low. Hey, that's certainly appreciated. Still taking feedback as we sort of make this thing work. Morgan Wallen's album was really the first big album release of 2021, but Aaron Watson, who makes really good albums, he dropped an album on January 8th as well called American Soul. Logan Mize, a newcomer named Willie Jones, coming with albums a little bit later in January. And then we get rolling into February, March, Florida Georgia Line, Tim McGraw on the books. Loretta Lynn recently announced a new album. It's called Still Woman Enough. It's coming in March. And this is something that is truly remarkable, because let's not forget here, she's less than 4 years removed from a stroke that I believe was pretty well underplayed by her team. I think that was a really, really serious medical event. Those who saw Loretta Lynn before May 2017 will tell you that she did her best, but she was limited on stage. I saw Loretta backstage at an event around that time, maybe a year or so earlier, and she was slow. I didn't interact with her or really have any sort of first-person reason to believe she was of any diminished capacity, but the scuttle in journalistic circles, certainly in the last few years, was that her best work, and maybe even her best life, was behind her. And then in January 2018, she broke her hip. And if we're being honest, that usually about does it for anyone over 85. There aren't many people pushing 90 springing around on a rebuilt hip. And I don't know why this is, but it really seems like a good fall can take you out at that age. And I'm not trying to be insensitive or flip here. It's happened in my family. When grandma falls, your heart jumps into your throat. I can tell you with assurance that just about every news outlet in town has a 3- or 4-year-old obituary ready to go for Loretta Lynn, but I'll be damned if she's not coming on strong here. Still Woman Enough follows Wouldn't It Be Great, which nabbed her a Grammy nomination, and the concept of this new album is really pretty strong. She's doing covers of Hank Williams and the Carter Family, and a recitation of her song Coal Miner's Daughter, which I am totally here for. I love listening to people of a certain age recite things. I do. You don't believe me? Just go listen to the intro episode of this podcast. They got that conviction and the cadence down tight. It's a really brilliant idea she had, or that someone on her team had, but she executed. I'd like to hear George Strait recite something. Willie Nelson, he pretty much does it on every album. I'm all in for it. There is one thing about Loretta's new album, though. One problem, and it's kind of a big one. Ever since Andrea Williams joined the podcast, or I guess more accurately, ever since I started paying attention to what Andrea says, I've started to try to see things from her point of view with regards to race and country music. It's pretty hard not to quickly start seeing a system that that boxes out black singers and Latino singers and does it without any intention, but because it's just what's always happened. And the press release on Still Woman Enough says it's a celebration of women in country music, but it should say it's a celebration of white women in country music. They whitewashed the hell out of this thing. If you watched any of that Ken Burns documentary from 2019 on PBS, it's called Country Music, you saw how important a role blacks and African Americans' music played in shaping country music. Something that you can hear today if you listen to any blues or country song with your eyes closed. But there isn't a drop of brown skin on this record. It's a lot of our old songs like You Ain't Woman Enough and I Wanna Be Free. And then there are more than two traditional or gospel songs, particularly Old Kentucky Home, which has sort of a complicated message when it comes to race and slavery. It's been interpreted both ways. I don't know the history of this song, and I'm not really smart enough to say if that's the place where Loretta could have asked a sister to join her. But she does have some power when it comes to the guests. Reba joins Loretta for a song. In fact, Reba and Carrie Underwood both join Loretta on the title track. Tanya Tucker stops by. Margot Price, a part of the album. I mean, that's a really good lineup, and all these women are surely deserving and worthy of being there. They also have skin as white as snow. And I want you to understand, certainly by the time we get to the end of this, that I'm not even criticizing Loretta, per se, as much as I am pointing out an example of what this all looks like. I guess that's criticism, but it's not that she didn't ask Mickey Guyton or someone else to sing with her. I mean, she could have gone back a few decades and pulled a Linda Martell or someone of that nature. It's that for nearly 90 years, her music progressed to this point that it wasn't even an option. That her definition of celebrating women in country music is so restrictive. And that in large part, no one's going to say anything. As far as I can tell, Loretta really doesn't have too much of a blemish on her record. It's not like Willie Nelson, who called Charlie Pride the superhero version of the N-word and then said they were friends. Loretta was pretty progressive to the extent that it was possible for a woman who grew up in Kentucky in the 30s and 40s was allowed to be progressive. Here's an example. I think this really stands out and is maybe emblematic of where she was and maybe even where she is. In 1982, Loretta was playing the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia, and a black man named Caesar Gators was patrolling the stage. Part of the security team. He was a bouncer, and he was protecting her band and the whole stage, and he was described as having very, very dark skin. During the show, presumably near the end, Loretta was singing Coal Miner's Daughter when she stopped, and she asked Caesar to stand and said, according to his lawyer, "If you people don't know what coal looks like, here is somebody who knows what coal is all about. Black is beautiful, ain't it, honey?" Caesar filed a lawsuit. He was looking for $2 million, but he dropped the case when it became clear he was going to lose. And I'll link to the lawyer's account of it from 2012 at the website countrymediapodcast.com. He wrote it for the Richmond Times-Dispatch after Caesar died. It's really an interesting read with a few sidebars to take. At the end of the day, though, you want to guess who Caesar was most mad at? It wasn't Loretta. It was his community. It was his own people. Loretta, she walked in the deposition room, walked right up to him and gave him a big hug and tried to assure him that she meant no disrespect. He fully forgave her, but he couldn't forgive a community who really mocked him for the color of his skin. So what do we learn from Loretta there? We learn she was flawed and perhaps not aware of how what she says can affect others all the time, but she's willing to learn. It also says that she's not aware of what she doesn't say or doesn't do can affect others. So this time I'm speaking up. And I'm speaking up in a way I feel comfortable doing so. Kind of long form in this podcast. I'm not going to put it all in tweet. You know, I think this is something, the tweeting of these social important statements, I think that's something that very, very few people are capable of. But it's the thing that social media seems to demand almost instantly. Whenever there's a social transgression, we expect everyone to tweet some sort of outrage, and that's just not how it works. You know, just because it's crickets on Twitter doesn't mean there isn't some sort of conversation happening. Here's why. For one thing, anyone over the age of 40, especially in the journalism world, if you went to school and had it hammered into you that objectivity and keeping your opinion out of the news is first and foremost important, we're not going to be there. Not to mention that we're just not quick at it, you know? All the cylinders don't fire so quickly for us when we're over 40, and it's not because we're old, it's just because that's just not how we were raised, you know? It really takes me a long time to sort through some of these big issues like Black Lives Matter or the siege on the Capitol. I mean, things that trouble me for reasons that I can't fully explain for days. You know, the Me Too movement, I was deep in my feelings for weeks trying to sort that all out. Most people under 30, closer to 30, under 30, they can kind of snap the right thing to say out. And I admire this. I admire people that really can do that because we need you to do just that within reason. You know, I think it was the young people leading the way during the Black Lives Matter protests last summer. Conversely, after Route 91, everyone was pretty mad about artists who were seemingly silent on the issues like gun rights. I even took a call from a public radio station. This was funny. Some public radio station producer called me. She was somewhere. She wanted me to come on and really sort of flex some outrage at these artists who weren't speaking up. And I wouldn't do it. And they dropped me from the guest list before I even got a chance to get on the show. I think because of my calm, reasoned approach to things. It didn't work for them on public radio of all places. Tim McGraw, Carrie Underwood, they didn't say too much about it back then with Route 91, but they wrote and recorded songs about guns that are ultimately going to last quite a bit longer. Same for Eric Church. This is sort of this weird thing where we cancel people for saying the wrong thing and then for saying nothing. You know, important things aren't happening on Twitter. You know, rarely do big things move on social media. No one needs to appease some blogger with time and emotions and some juiced up expectation about how this conversation should go. I really and truly disagree with the notion that the country music community is afraid to speak up and no one wants to get Dixie chicked. I just think they don't have the words for it. Or people are a little bit too self-absorbed to really put those words in some sort of organized way and deliver them. There's a lack of social maturity. It's really not all that different when I tell my six-year-old son, when he's kind of babbling, trying to tell me something, I'm like, slow down, use your words. If you're a parent, maybe you've said that to your kids. It's my favorite condescending thing to say to my kids. Use your words. Tried that on my wife once, and she about slapped me the next week. But that's how it is with these things. I mean, you know, the thoughts just keep spinning in my head. And it's like, slow down, Billy. Use your words. You know, even at 50 or 60, we're mature, supposedly, when we get there. Might not have the words. So you look for the effort. Look for the long-term messaging. And embrace what someone is trying to say when you damn well know what they're trying to say. Tim McGraw taught me that. A new year and new numbers with a bunch of familiar faces leading by the numbers this week. Luke Combs tops the country album chart with What You See Is What You Get, followed by Chris Stapleton's new one Starting Over and Luke Combs' debut album. You can look for Morgan Wallen to have a big number one week next week. On streaming, Luke has the top two with Forever After All and Better Together. Gabby Barrett's I Hope is at number three. Top sales go 3-2-1 Forever After All, Lil Bit by Nelly and Florida Georgia Line, and a song called 2020 by Mitch Rozell. Most added is Justin Moore with We Didn't Have Much. Number one airplay is Lady A, Champagne Nights, and the number one hot country song, once again, Gabby Barrett, and I Hope for the 24th week. Big thanks to Billboard for the charts, Taste of Country for the work and the paycheck, and you for listening to 24 episodes of this thing. I also want to thank Zach for the kind words for his review on Apple Podcasts. You can rate and review for yourself. Follow me on Twitter at Billy Dukes, and then come back next week with music critic and Rolling Stone research editor Jonathan Bernstein. He's going to talk about reviewing albums as an art form, what he looks for, and specifically his review of Morgan Wallen's Dangerous, the double album. How did he wrap his arms around such a huge album? Let's find out together next Monday on episode 25 of the Country Music Media Podcast.